This is tape number four, side number one, continuing with the interview with Ralph Mackey, and it's taking place at his home on Division Street in Ishpeming on July 19th, 1994, and my name is Mary Tippett Andes. What I'd like to ask about next is, during the time that Roland was a child, was there anything that you remember about Christmas? Do you have typical Christmas traditions or Christmas meals or things like that?
Well, yeah, Christmas, when my boy was born, when he was the oldest one of all the grandchildren of my brothers. Well, when they got to, say, 4 or 5 years old, you know, we had Santa Claus, and I was the Santa Claus most of the time. So, when I played Santa Claus, and they believed in Santa Claus that time, and we had not as many toys as they get nowadays, but that time we had one or two toys. But that one time, my son asked his mother, how come, where's Dad always when Santa Claus comes? Well, my wife didn't know what to say, but she said, oh, he had to run downtown. And when I got back, took off the Santa Claus suit, well, right away my son said, Dad, why do you have to go downtown every time Santa Claus comes around? Well, that kind of made me, I didn't know what to do then. But after that, then we had kind of turns with the brothers, and then finally we had couple of strangers, not strangers, but good friends of ours play Santa Claus, and they'd come over and play Santa Claus, and they really enjoyed that, so. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a comical thing that went on that time anyway. Mm-hmm. So,
do you remember any particular thing that Roland wanted for Christmas, or was there a particular place that you and Marion would shop for a Christmas toy?
Well, that's kind of a hard question. There was always, it's not exactly what he wanted. There were things he wanted, and we would get to it. But a lot of time, it wasn't that big of a thing or expensive thing, but we mostly felt our way of buying things for him, that say some good pair of boots or good clothes too, which the kids would look for toys mostly, but he had plenty of toys too, and there were a lot of erector sets, and he wanted that. I remember that now, yeah. And he had a lot of fun with that one, and I can't remember just what other kind of games. And maybe that cowboy original, and the cowboy holsters and belts and cap guns or whatever, or just play pistols, you know, and things like that, you know.
How about Christmas dinner? Was there a Christmas dinner tradition in your family?
Every Christmas, and we still get together on that. It was mostly always at my mother's house. And my mother had always, she was a religious person, and we sang some Christmas songs and Silent Night and really some spiritual songs. And then we really had, everyone donated so much, and us brothers always bought the turkey or ham or whatever. The thing cost my mother, but she did bake a lot, and they were some good stuff too, you know. But everyone pitched in, and it was a very, very good evening. It was always Christmas Eve, and then after we ate, then Santa Claus came and then passed out the gifts, and we still do that. Now we got our great grandchildren. Now Bobby, my great grandson, now we dress him as Santa Claus, just for. There are no small ones no more, you know, and then he passes out with my help, but I have always passed out the gifts, because I monkey around with the kids, and I holler say if it's like Nicole, our great granddaughter, says, I'll holler on, Nicole, Nicole, and she's in front of me, I'm here, Grandpa, I'm here, Grandpa. And, you know, it's things like that and make things. And I always said later on, my later years, I said, well, someone else should pass out the kids. No, the kid says, Grandpa, you gotta play Santa Claus. And I enjoy so much with the kids, and I have a ball with them. And it just, them are the things I ever, memories come back to me, you know. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of pictures of me playing, me with Santa Claus. And so, but they, none of them could put on a show like I did. I don't know why, and I'm not bragging about it, but you have to do that. So. Yeah.
What about, as part of Christmas dinner, are there any particular foods or dishes that were traditional Christmas
well,
food?
Yes, well, it was turkey and with all the trimmings and everything, and my wife made what they call a plum pudding. It was an English dish, and with the sauce, and they really go, and she still makes it every Christmas, plum pudding. And it's a funny thing, there's no plums in it, but they call it plum pudding. So, and then there's rice pudding and with strawberry on top, and a lot of, my mother used to do a lot of bakery goods, you know. And everyone brought something, you know, and something different. And but my wife always brought that plum pudding, and that's her job to make that. Mm-hmm. Have you had it? Yeah. She the real suet, and they're gonna be just so, and she picks out the suet too, you know. So.
Without getting into too many details on the plum pudding, because that's a story all by itself. Did you ever have to work shifts on Christmas?
Yes, I put in some shifts. In my later years, it's mostly emergency. When I was in the shops, there was emergency. I had to work. Mm-hmm. But the only time I wasn't there for Christmas when I was in the Merchant Marines that time. I missed two Christmases. But they still, the family kept it going. Of course, my two brothers, were four of us, we were in the services, you know. So, but they kept the party going.
We talked a little bit earlier about the fact that you built your own house. Going back, you know, to the 30s and 40s and things like that, did you feel that home ownership was something that most mining families could afford to do?
I don't really think so at that time. When I built this, I started in 1948. The money wasn't there, and you worked, but we did get that 18 and a half cents. That's what kind of made me build that time. And I had a pretty good payday that time, and I got a Roy Millibacki for a bulldozer. He came and bulldozed the basement hole for me. And from then on, and then I got one of the engineers from the mine to give me the lines. And I said, don't forget, you ain't going to get paid for this. But I ain't got money to pay, but you're a good friend of mine. You'll be a friend of mine for life for if you do. So he put the lines for me, and then from there on, I got a mixer from Otto Swanson. We mixed the footing, and then we started the block work, and up she started going. So it took a while.
When you mentioned the 18 and a half cents, I wanted to clarify something. The 18 and a half cents that was the raise given after the strike, was that 18 and a half cents a day or an hour?
An hour.
You and I have talked just a little bit about one of your favorite hobbies. Can you tell me for the tape what your favorite hobbies are.
Well, my favorite hobby actually was fishing, hunting, and as far as the hobbies around home, like I told you before, I start tying flies. And one thing, when you own your own home, that's a hobby itself. There's always something to do in your own home, but you're willing to do it. And I can do just about anything, not bragging or anything, but I set my mind to it. I can fix anything in this house, and I don't hire anybody. And so that's the... Maybe I got the, I don't know, I got the guts to do it, or is it the, you got that much skill that you can do it, and I ain't afraid to tackle anything.
Is that also true for cars? Do you do all your own car maintenance too?
Just about until now, when you get into this computer cars, you can't touch them. But there are a few things you can do with them, but as far as the... Like in other cars, like the truck I got, there's 71 Chev pickup. I've never been in a garage. Maintain it, of course, you know, put the spark plugs, points, everything, time it. I got all the equipment for put the time in. My son is the same thing. He just took after me, like he takes care of his trucks. And ever since I built the garage, and they were always in my garage doing fixing their vehicles, and he finally got his own garage and my new garage, but he won't let me go in his garage now.
Why not?
Just a joke, it's jokingly. But he's a brand new garage and it's nice and clean and everything, but they didn't care how much oil they spent in my garage, you know. Mm-hmm.
After a brief pause for a drink of water, the next topic I want to talk a little more about is religious life. And I think we talked a little bit about that with your mom, but I'd like to talk about it with you and what your feeling is about the importance of religious life.
Well, we just about lived in church when my mother was living. She was a very religious person, which I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. But I went to Bethel. It was a Finnish Lutheran church at that time. It was went Sunday school, confirmation, all in Finnish language. Reverend Hillola was the pastor. But things were tough that time. 1929, I got confirmed. But in 1928 and 27, the church wanted to build a little extension in the back, and the people didn't have the money them days, so it was a lot of volunteer work. I was even maybe 15, 16 years old, and hand digging the basement back there, just to help. And all the women were all making pasties every week. And they'd sell them to the mines. Well, I wasn't working at the mines them days, but I'd be with the guys going to Pedley's for pasties. And we, our job first was to, they make the pasties in church and then bring them over to Superior Bakery to bake them. And when they get done, it was a routine work. We had a big wagon where we would bring them back. And they'd ship them off to the mines, and the timing was good. And all these Finnish ladies, you could hear that Finn language going steady all the, and there was a bunch of happy ladies, I tell you, I always remember that. And my mother was one of them there, so. So, that was all voluntary work.
Mm-hmm. So, do you remember what those pasties would sell for, by any chance?
15 cents a pasty. And they made money on it. So, and they were big pasties, so they were no skimpy pasties. All the labor making them was volunteer work, and I think they had a lot of donations from the Koski store and the Rosberg store, And they, well, they made enough money to pay for the back. They had a carpenter, Hakelite, who was a carpenter in charge of the work, and they paid him off and all the material, and the part in the back is still there, but there's a brick around it now, so.
How about your present life and the time that Roland was growing up? Was church a big part of your life then and now?
About now in my...
Yeah, and when Roland was small.
When he was married or...
When he was a boy.
Oh, you mean part of our life all mm-hmm. the time? Yes, right till the time he went to... I mean, he was gone in the Navy for 4 years, but every furlough he was in California at the time, he says, he's got a furlough coming, but I said he ain't got no money, so we send him the money to fly home or the train, whatever he came at that time. And this one time, when he went back, I had given him that 57 Chevrolet, and he wanted to take that back there with him because it was stationed in San Diego. Well, I didn't want him to drive alone, so I got time off from the mine to go, and I drove with him out there. We took 3 days before we got there, and then I flew back, and so I just didn't want him to drive alone all the way. So that's the way we thought about him that way. You know, we just didn't want him to go alone, and so we were very close. I mean, right to today, they're here every Saturday and Sunday morning for their coffee, and Saturday is just about all the whole family is here except my grandson, because he's in Indiana, so they were here for their goodies, and mm-hmm. and right away they hit for the cupboard, and always goodies there.
mm-hmm. You got children?
Homemade goodies? I want to ask if they're homemade goodies.
Oh, have you got children?
Yeah.
Oh. Grandchildren?
No. No, not yet.
Not yet.
Okay. One other thing I want to just finish up is how important is church in your life today?
Church is very important. I probably talked about it before. It seems to me that church has changed so much that it's... It seems that it's more big business than the church of years ago. Because now, even years ago, you paid your, there was no pledges or anything. You paid what you could afford. But now the churches, it seems, they got to have these pledges, and they, every time you turn around, it seems they want so much money for this. They're remodeling, like they're remodeling the church now, you know, with mm-hmm. some $150,000 worth, and they send your literature out with, well, you need kind of a pledge for that. And it was a hard thing for me to make a pledge, because I brought up in the old school, and I always say to anyone going to church, you give what you can afford. And even a pledge, when you make a pledge, then you're, yeah, if you make a pledge for a year, it seems that you got to get that money, even if you ain't got it. Give them that money. See? So it seems to be a different ballgame. And like I said before, I'm no religious fanatic of any kind, but I believe in the Lord, and I thank the Lord every day for what I've got, and the family I got, the home I got, the job, and my health. I thank the Lord many times a day for that. And if someone tells me that there's no God, I just got a good notion to let them have one, because you just think about your own body and your lifestyle and everything, and it's God is behind every bit of it. And we've been through many ministers, and when Reverend Olal was here, I was in a men's course. I don't know if we talked, I think we talked about that, yeah. And I enjoyed that until the next minister came, that he could care less if we were the men course or not, and that's what broke us up. And it was, from then on, it kind of hurt not only me, but the whole bunch of us, you know, that. And I, we kind of stayed away from the church that time. Well, the wife, too, that time, when this minister came after all of us, I wanted to, anyone that belongs to this church got to be baptized by this church. Wife didn't like that at all. But the minister did come over and he kind of apologized. But he was a very strict and very religious man, I know that. But it was just my own opinion about him. And he didn't last there too long.
One last question I want to ask you about. You told me that your great-grandson is an important part of your life. And I'm curious what kinds of things you try to teach him, and I'd like to have you just talk about your Saturdays with your great-grandson, at least when he was a little bit younger, before he got to be a teenager.
Well, my great-grandson, I was so proud of the day he was born. And he's been very, very close to me. And it's so close that when he was growing up, I remember always when he always had sore throat. So they had a doctor examine him, and he said, got to have his tonsils out. And when you get your tonsils out, you're really, really in misery for 2-3 days, you know. But he didn't want nobody else but Grandpa there. And I went there and I talked to him and I held his hand and his forehead. I was with a washcloth, you know, cooling him off. And kind of settled him right back. And by golly, he snapped out of that pretty good. And then as he was growing up, he was always over here. And any time he had a chance, and we'd go and pick him up. And every Saturday, then we got together and I'd take him town. At first, it just a town, but in my later years, he'd come here in the morning, Saturday morning. He'd go down to in the basement. I got a workshop down there, and he was always making things down there. And I said, one thing, I said, Bobby, anything you make, you always got to take it home. You don't leave it here, because it just piled up, you know. But anyway, then Grandma would make us a good lunch, and well, the whole family was here in the morning, but he'd get left here and make us a good lunch. Then we'd go bowling in the afternoon. From there, we went sauna, and he enjoyed that sauna. Well, first, my brother had a sauna in Niani, and we went there just about every Saturday, but once he couldn't light the sauna anymore, and then we went to the Elks Lodge and sauna there. And we've taken him out to the hunting camp, to not only me, but his great-grandpa, but his grandpa would take him too, you know, out in the woods, and let him shoot out of the guns and show him all the safety things you gotta watch and do. And he sat in my blind with me when watching deer come. And that's something that I treasure, you know. I could go on and on brag about him, but.
Let me just ask you one more question. What's your great-grandson's name?
Bobby. Robert Uren.
I think that's all we need to get. Anything else that you think I should have asked you about that I didn't ask you about, or anything else you want to say?
I don't know if there's much more I can say. Maybe I said it already. I did mention when you asked me about religious life, and I was going to mention too that church or minister will not get you to heaven. It's up to you, yourself, that's got to make it your way to get to heaven and to take Christ in your life. And a minister can help. There's no reason that you should go and listen to the Word of God, but I still believe that you've got to do it yourself. That's about it. I don't know if I said that right, but you know the meaning of it anyway. Oh.
Anything else you want to say?
No, that's about it, I think. I probably I think about something about midnight tonight. Will you be up? I'll give you a call.
Sure. On that note.
I always say someone asks me something, I can't think of their name. Or you say, well, I'll call you about midnight when I think about it. And that's when I do think about things like that. See?
I'll look forward to hearing my phone ring. With that, we will conclude the interview with Ralph Mackey. Mm-hmm.